second one like turned into a different movie. Yeah. Space album. I mean, granted, you don't want to rehash, but from what I've seen of the third one, just felt like it was like
it's a highlight.
Yeah,
highlight really pitch black.
And then there were two. So if you're listening to these like in sequence, basically you get like three episodes of four people at a time.
That sounds about right.
Including the day you
and we are recording right now.
Yes, we are recording.
Yeah, I forget like this one doesn't actually like show it aside from like the little cursor moving.
Yeah.
Did we do an intro? I feel like we just started talking.
Yeah. I'm not sure where I'm going to cut in. Probably when I said, and then there were two. This is the Film Rescue Show. We're the show with the biggest ego. As big as Ego the Living Planet. I think I've made that joke before.
Possibly. If not, I'm sad.
Oh, well.
And here is my plug. If you want to be on this show, if you want to bring us from two people up to three or four, you can. You can be on the show. Here's the criteria. You need to think of a movie that was supposed to be really good and then really let you down. And then you need to think up a way to fix it, a way to change it. Just, you could have a list of grievances, but we also want you to, you know, we also want you to have some ideas on how to fix it. You don't have to have a whole pitch. We're not asking you to write a whole script, obviously. But you do need to have some ideas on what you wish would have happened. If you meet that criteria, send an email to filmrescueshow@gmail.com. We check it religiously. I'm in there every single day. We get emails every single week. I want to see your darling, bright, shiny face in our email. Also, hit us up on Twitter, @filmrescueshow. You can send us DMs there if you have some questions, if you're like, hey, I have some ideas, but like I'm scared or I don't know what to do or like I don't feel like I deserve to be on a podcast. That's not true, patently not true, but you can send us messages there if you'd like a little more information. We need support, guys. We need help with this show. And for just $1, for just $1, you can help support the show by going to patreon.com/Montressor Media. It's not under Film Rescue Show because Montressor Media owns the Film Rescue Show. We're just part one little arm in a larger company. Go there, and for $1, you can get unaired episodes of this show, including this one that you're listening to right now. I had to go through and cut the whole thing down. I'm recording this little section after. This is a week later from what you're about to hear me cut into, but it will be seamless as if I had done it on the same day. There will be a unedited, I think like almost 3-hour podcast from this topic. I don't know how it happened. I have no idea what happened, but it did happen. And so the one you're listening to right now, very truncated, very cut down. Just the pitch, just the important stuff. But if you want to hear the whole conversation, and it's a fun conversation, I laughed, I cried a little, maybe. Not really, but it was a fun conversation. Just me and Brandon shooting the shit. If you're lonely, for $1, you cannot be lonely. That, I don't know if that comes off as mean or not. Doing these promos by myself, there's no one to bounce it off of. Here's the last thing. Here's the last little bit of fun. If you listen to this through Apple Podcasts, and according to my metrics, the overwhelming majority of you do, here's what you got to do. Scroll down to the bottom of this app, and where it says 5 stars, click write a review, leave us a 5-star review. The 5 stars helps us get onto into the trending page, into the suggested page, helps us grow our audience. That's how you can help us grow our audience for absolutely free, is with that 5-star review. But for a little added fun, leave a review and just go crazy with it. I mean, like, get verbose, get Shakespearean, write something insane there, and we'll read them on the air at the end of the shows. I'm really excited for this part of it. I've been doing it on other people's podcasts just to see if I can get their attention, but you have my attention here, is what I'm saying. So, 5-star review. Leave us a crazy review. We'll read it on the air. Then, you know, you can grab that clip and throw it on your Facebook and be like, hey, look, I was on this show. I was on here before they got famous. That was me. Yeah, so that's all there is. FilmRescueShow@gmail.com, @FilmRescueShow on Twitter, patreon.com/Montressor Media for $1. Get the full version of this episode, plus other unaired, unedited episodes. Here's what it is, yes, folks. It's just me and Brandon today, because Devin's a pansy ass.
Now I need to go back and listen to the episodes that I'm not in recently. And it's like, well, Brandon's not here because he's a douche.
No, actually, I don't, like, normally I don't even make note of who's not here. It's just I'm mad because Devin's on the East Coast and not in the studio. And it is so easy to cut this show together when all three of us are in the same place and I don't have to sync anything. All I have to do is, oh, there's the break, clip, clip, here's the segment for Mike, plop, clip, plop, intro, outro, done.
Yeah.
Ugh. Unless I have to, like, censor anything in the beginning. I don't have to censor pansy ass, right?
I would think not. Or douche. Because, you know, just walk into a CVS and there's a douche.
Just I want to do one of those bits where, like, I say something and then go back and bleep a bunch out, but it was really, like, inane.
Unnecessary censorship.
Yeah.
Or something like that. But it's appropriate that there's only two of us since we are doing Men in Black 2.
Correct.
Is that not wrong? Or is that not right? Or Men 2 Black, depending on the logo that you look at. Because I think that was a thing that was edgy and cool, apparently.
That was the poster on Amazon when I rented it.
Sadly, I actually technically have the second film in 4K, only because I had the trilogy.
Oh.
And it was for the 20th anniversary, so it has, like, all three of them in 4K. And what's funny is I think both the first and second ones are, like, true 4K, and the third one was upscale because, you know, 2K digital intermediates are a thing.
Right.
So, yeah, that's why, like, I have a love-hate relationship with 4K, but that's a rant for another time. So
maybe we can circle back around on that at the end.
Yeah, maybe.
Here's what's going to happen, though. Okay. This is the first episode where I'm changing things up.
Ooh.
Because
I didn't study for this test.
If you follow me on Twitter, like my personal account, not the show account, I'm a slut for podcast statistics. You know, in the group chat, I'm constantly like 94% retention on this episode. People who listen tend to listen to almost everything and actually usually will bail on the end. It, like,
you've made it that far.
Yeah.
It's like a Marvel movie. Just stay through the very end.
The one that confuses me is specifically your Mortal Kombat one is, like, literally 94% retention. So, like, people are listening to the whole thing, essentially, when they listen to it. And then there'll be other episodes where people are bailing at, like, an hour 20 into a 2-hour podcast, which I get. Like, by that point, we've rescued the movie. That's what you were here for.
Yeah.
But that means that when I'm giving the instructions on how you can get on the show,
yeah,
it's at the end and you missed it. And that's all I want to change. I'm going to tell you how to get on the show at the beginning now.
So it's like the history of movie trailers. They used to play after the movie, but they're like, hey, no one's staying to see these previews of other films. We're going to put them in front. Although that's why they used to be called trailers. They would trail the movie.
There you go.
Now you know.
Yeah, so if you want to be on the Film Rescue Show, and you can, if you've listened to the last 5 episodes, I think, have been just not big YouTubers. We do have a big YouTuber coming on next week, but oh well. if you want to be on the show, send your pitch to filmrescueshow@gmail.com. We check it religiously. We take all of them seriously. Well, almost all of them. The guy that said he didn't send a pitch, he just said rescue the room and get Tommy Wiseau on. And I was like, I mean, honestly.
Oh my God.
I would.
That whole thing will just turn into, like, one giant fever dream.
Oh, my God. I will get drunk and high for that one. I want to leave that experience thinking I dreamt
it. You want to be on the same plane as him, so I think that'll help.
Yeah, exactly.
So, yeah.
You can also follow us on Twitter. That's @FilmRescueShow. And if you really like this podcast and you would like to support us, we do have a Patreon. It's under our parent company, Montressor Media. So that's patreon.com/Montressor Media for $1. You get access to basically everything.
I'd buy that for $1.
Yeah, including special episodes of the podcast that are not available anywhere else.
Too hot for TV.
Sometimes, I don't want to promise they always will be crazy, but, like, we don't censor and our pitches usually go way wild. So, all I'm saying is, for a dollar, you could spend that dollar a lot worse ways than adding to the Patreon. So, with that being said, we're rescuing Men in Black 2.
Woo.
Directed by Barry Sonnenfeld and starring Will Smith in, hot take, his worst role. As far as...
Now, just that specific film or the franchise?
That film.
Okay.
Because he was on in Men in Black 1.
Yes.
And from what I recall, Men in Black 3 I've seen pretty recently, he was actually, like, maybe being a little nuanced in 3?
Yeah, 3 is not bad. I think it's a little overlooked, not underrated, but just overlooked.
Yeah.
I think Men in Black 2 is partly to blame. And there was a 10-year gap between the two.
Yeah.
And what's weird is, like, I was actually talking about this earlier, how you have the new film coming out soon, Men in Black International, and it feels like it's been longer between Men in Black 3 and Men in Black International.
Yeah.
It's been 7 years, though. There was a 10-year gap between 2 and 3, though.
Yeah.
That's the weird part. So, yeah, I don't know. Maybe you just had to, like, kind of step away for a bit, even though it was still, like, 5 years between 1 and 2, which is already, like, a pretty decent gap at
yeah.
that time when everything, every sequel is, like, 2 to 3 years for everything at the time.
Yeah, I think so. This is why I had to watch. I watched it twice last night. So I popped it on thinking I'll just, like, take a couple notes, get an idea for a pitch. And then when I got to the end, I was like, was that Will Smith's worst performance? And I had to go back through his...
I mean, I still haven't seen Wild Wild West, really.
But he was trying in that one.
Okay. Same director, too, ironically.
I know. I yeah, this guy's got a weird filmography, doesn't he?
Adam's Family as well.
Yeah.
Both of them.
He'll take weird projects, which, like, good on you, dude.
Yeah, he
that's
was
brave.
Very, he seemed very Burton-esque, but maybe like Diet Burton.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
Diet Burton. I mean, even going so far as working with Danny Elfman a bunch.
True. Oh, yeah. Very true.
So Will Smith has made worse movies after Earth.
Is he really to blame for that?
But he's trying. Like, A, he's doing a very different character in After Earth. And, like, you could tell he was applying himself, especially since his son was in it, too.
Yeah.
This one, there's one scene that, like, the actual reason that I rewatched was there's always a, like, Will Smith character establishing scene in every movie where you get him being the most that character that he can be. And it's usually early. And in the first Men in Black, it was him chasing the... the criminal down and then him applying to MIB.
Yeah.
That was like as that character as you can, it was as Jay as you can be.
Now, do you feel like that was because this was a sequel and they felt like, oh, he's already been established. We really don't need quite that much. I mean, yeah, we got like the subway scene, but yeah.
No, so the scene I'm thinking of in this one is him walking through MIB establishing that he like kind of runs the place now.
Yeah, like he's become the new K.
Yeah, which... His eyes are dead in that scene.
Yeah, it's like he really didn't know how to play the straight man quite yet.
Yeah.
Like, he wasn't there yet. I mean, like, the later Will Smith wasn't there yet, so I think it was, like, a weird transitional phase, maybe?
Maybe. I don't know.
Yeah.
But that dead eye thing is throughout the movie.
I need to be more like Tommy Lee Jones.
I think he just, like, got the Bruce Willis bug and just was like, eh, everybody knows we're all just here for the money of the sequel. I'm not going to really try as hard.
Well, thankfully, he bounced back somewhat from that as opposed to our good friend Bruce.
Big
Willis style.
I believe Bruce has one last killer role in him. I do.
I hope.
I want to believe.
If it's Die Hard 6 and they bring back McTiernan, sure.
I want to believe.
I want to believe.
Yeah. That was a very long aside to say that I just... The other thing that affirmed it to me, if you put Will Smith across from a female actress, it's always going to be electricity.
Yeah.
What was that movie he did with Margot Robbie that wasn't Suicide Squad?
Oh God, I know what you're talking about.
It was like,
and it's one of those movies that exists, then you forgot it existed, and then you can't remember the name. But I know
Collision. I saw it twice in theaters.
Really?
Odd. It just happened.
Like I remember, it's like they're like con artists or something like
yeah.
that. Like I know what you're talking about, but the name is like.
Yeah,
just gone.
I was not expecting it to work, and then he made it work. But and then this movie, Rosario Dawson is like she's as charming as they come.
Yeah.
And their scenes together, I'm like, were these filmed at like different times? Was this like... Oh,
this was like one of her first big roles too, wasn't it?
It was, yeah.
Yeah. I was actually thinking about that this morning too, because like I wouldn't say she was wooden in this, but she was a little deer in the headlights at times.
She had nothing to do.
Yeah, like then like what, 2 or 3 years later you had Sin City, it was like a world of difference.
Oh yeah.
Like she was like just taking charge every time you saw her on screen in that film. But yeah, like you said, she had like very little to do in this one. She was like a glorified damsel in distress.
A glorified MacGuffin.
That too. She's like both. She's a MacGuffin in distress.
Yeah. So. And that's, okay. Can you explain the villain's plan in this movie?
Once again, probably not. I was just like joking. Like I was going to stop you ahead. But now that I heard the whole question, probably not. I mean, you got the whole Light of Zartha thing, and apparently the alien needed that, but it's really just a rehash of the first film almost. And in fact, they did an honest trailer for not just the first movie. They did like the whole trilogy. And they kind of joked about the fact that all three films deal with like, oh, this thing that they're looking for that was right under their nose. And all three films had that. Like,
yeah.
Oh, God, you're right. Even the third one.
Yeah.
But yeah, like it was just kind of the generic, oh, this thing I'm looking for is on Earth. I'm going to kill all the humans that are in my way.
Yeah.
But with Johnny Knoxville by my side.
Jesus Christ.
And this spare half head.
The
you like egg salad.
The plan, as I could gather it, was years ago, Kay hid the Light of Zartha, which he should know, I guess, is a baby, right? Like, was it an egg? They never show it.
They don't. I feel like there's so much that was missing, and not just because they had to change the ending, but it's. You were talking earlier about pacing, and it's like, it gets really weird because it's almost like they were like, all right, we need to finish. Hurry, hurry, hurry. And because of that, I feel like we are missing things like that.
There's a easily 10-minute chunk of this movie that doesn't exist.
Oh, yeah.
Not
even cut, just didn't exist to begin
with. Oh, yeah. The jump from them flying somewhere to they've arrived and are sending her away.
Yeah.
It was the first watch through that I was like, did I miss? Just,
did I just
boom,
black
boom.
Out?
Yeah, I was like, I feel like something happened, but I don't know what. So, okay.
You got neuralized.
Yeah. Literally.
The movie was simulating what it feels like to be neuralized. It's totally intentional.
Which, as an idea, isn't terrible, but it has to be intentional.
Yeah. Okay. It has to have a better payoff.
So, years in the past, Kay hides the Light of Zartha, which is, we find out, a person.
Yes.
With undisclosed, is she like royal? Is there like a space politics thing going on here? Does she have a power that can be absorbed?
Space politics. It's a secret Star Wars spinoff.
I mean... Can I tell you really quickly about a really weird dream I had?
Sure.
I went to the Rise of Skywalker release in my dream.
Oh, no.
And the movie starts off with them finding a map. And the map was of the United States. And I was in the theater going, if they go the fuck to Earth, I'm out. Star Wars is canceled. Nobody's going to Earth in the Star Wars movies. It's not happened. That, hopefully that doesn't happen, but that was in my dream.
What's so weird, though, is like they always say in a long time ago in a galaxy far, far away, if they ever come to Earth, are they just going to like find dinosaurs?
Right. Yeah.
Like how long ago are we talking?
Right. Yeah. Because isn't there like Indiana Jones, 3PO, R2-D2? There's like some kind of... crossover with the Indiana Jones, you know, because it's all Spielberg.
Yeah.
But
Spielberg, Lucas.
Yeah.
Smorgasbord.
Anyway. That was a weird aside.
Speaking of Spielberg, he produced some alien films known as Men in Black.
Speaking of Spielberg.
We tend to forget that he was like a producer on these movies.
They like pot shots at him in this one too.
Oh, yeah.
I was like, oh, all right. I go for it, I guess.
Could have been his idea. Who knows?
Also, this is technically a Marvel podcast.
I forgot about that.
Yep.
You're not wrong.
through changing of hands, the people who own the Men in Black comics. Yes, that's right. These are based on comics.
True. And apparently they were quite dark in the beginning.
Yes.
Kind of like Ninja Turtles. Like, oh, by the way, we're going to make this family friendly.
When we get into the rewrite, I'm going back into the comics. I've been researching on this one. I've actually put the work in. So this alien queen plant thing comes to Earth, wreaking havoc to find the light of Zartha, which, again, does she not know it's a baby?
Yeah, that's the weird thing. It's like, how much does she know and she doesn't know?
And also, why does she need it?
Yeah. Like,
there's no villain monologue of like, when I find the light of Zartha, I will be able to assume power of a planet.
I will obtain Orion's belt and destroy it.
At least, it's like, I don't even know what you want. I don't even know what you want to do.
Yeah.
Which is sad for a villain in a movie. I don't even specifically think these kinds of movies need villains either, but
yeah, it's tricky.
I just watched Good Time, and so that Robert Pattinson A24 movie.
Oh, I forgot about that.
There's no villain in it. It's all about him and his misadventures. And I was like, oh, it's weird to watch a movie that doesn't have an antagonist. Like, there are characters that play antagonists, specifically cops throughout, but like there's no
anti-villains, basically.
Yeah, but like they're not. There's no consistent one. It's just like him in these situations.
Okay.
And it held my attention. That was a good movie. Yeah. So I don't know. I don't know.
And that's where we are with Men in Black 2. I don't know.
I do have notes.
Okay.
And I'm realizing now that I was drinking during the second watch through because my
those are probably going to be the better notes.
Because my first note is Tommy Lee Jones' knees. Which I know exactly what I mean.
Well, you mean when he was still dressed as the postmaster?
What is going on down there? He has the weirdest old man legs. His socks were so high and his pants were so high that you could see like all of the knee. But it was specifically when he was walking away. I was like, does he have like an alien leg prosthetic? Oh, nope, that's just him. Oh, okay.
It's a twist. He's actually an alien.
Welcome to the Tommy Lee Jones Knees Appreciation Podcast.
Oh my God. Now I got the animated GIF in my head of him just like staring at that award show awkwardly. Like, I am not amused. And yes, I just said GIF. I sometimes go back and forth between GIF and GIF. Get over it.
Yeah.
So, depends on my audience.
I've actually already covered two of these points. So.
Oh, we're on a roll.
Another little weird nitpick.
Okay.
When Jay picks up Kay,
mm-hmm.
And there's a shot where Jay's in the car and Kay's like leaning in to talk to him and be like, I'll come, I'll see the thing, I'm gonna leave.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? The shot was done on a soundstage on a different day from when they had filmed the outside stuff. And the background, I'm pretty sure is the background from The Truman Show when he gets to the Skywall.
I know what you're talking about, and I'll have to go back and check that.
It was again, second watch through, one of those things where I'm just like, I'm looking for stuff now.
And what were you drinking?
Just vodka.
Oh, okay.
It wasn't like absinthe or anything.
I just had Bold Rock last night. That's all I had.
Oh.
I'm basic.
Yeah.
Put it that way.
I mean, you know, I just mix vodka into rock stars, and that's... Somehow they even each other out.
They cancel out.
The down and the up. It's probably terrible for me, but they taste amazing. Yeah, I did put in Will Smith's worst movie in my notes, and
there
then the villain was bad, which is, I guess, something a villain should be, but this one was not good.
Yeah, there's... How do I put it? A villain should be villainous, not bad.
So, here's the things that I liked. I'm doing this whole podcast backwards, man. Now that we've torn it apart.
Yes.
Here's the things I liked. I liked the villain idea.
Yes.
Like a plant-based thing.
Yeah. I mean, we had the bug in the first one. Let's go for a plant in the second one.
Yeah. And then I did not see this movie previously. This is, I guess, the first time I've watched it because I did not remember anything. I remember the pug in the suit from the trailers when I was a kid.
Oh, yeah. No, they pushed hard on Frank the pug.
Yeah.
And
the worm guys.
And the worm guys. Like, both of them were, like, single scene characters in the first one.
Yeah.
But then they, like, went all in on both of them.
Yep.
In this one. It's like, I like Frank. I like the worm guys, but moderation is key. Well, to be fair, in the first one, I think we see them twice. The second time is when they start to bail from Men in Black when they think Earth is about to get destroyed. And Rip Torn calls them sorry little ingrates. And they basically just cuss at them in their bug language.
How did they keep Rip Torn around for this series, too?
Well, it was a whopping two, because the third one, they said he was dead.
Yeah.
So, because I think at that point, he was just, like, drunk in public by that point. So, like, oh, we're just going to kill him off. So, that's fine.
Which, they should have just, like, method acted with him and just had him like slowly declined in the movies.
Rather than having him do the weird awkward kung fu scene in the office. And it's like, oh, you could tell this was like post Matrix and Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon, where everything, even if it was a comedy, had to have like a sampling of wire work.
Yep.
It's like, no.
And Tommy Lee Jones as well.
Yeah, yeah.
He had one of those wired up because he definitely can't kick that high.
No, yeah, he had to kick the Balchinian.
Yep.
I love, by the way, if you look hard enough, there's a gag reel where Will Smith comes up with different names for that alien. I can't remember all the names, but Balchinian was the one they settled with. And I'm surprised they got away with that gag for PG-13, by the way. It's like, it is clearly a nutsack on a chin.
Right.
Like, not even anything else.
I felt like that was an evolution from that joke in Star Trek when Captain Kirk gets in a fight when he's in a prison somewhere and kicks kicks an alien in his kneecaps and finds out that that's where his testicles are.
I'm trying to remember which one that was. I do.
I want to say three.
You might be right. I'm trying to remember, but that does sound familiar, though.
Actually,
I remember that movie Alien Nation with James Caan, where he was trying to kick someone in the nuts, and the main alien played by, what's his name? Inigo Montoya.
Yeah.
He actually tells him, like, oh, if you wanted that desired effect, you should have gone for under the arm. Something like that. But I think Star Trek had one, too. Like, both of them had, like, a similar gag.
Why did I look up Mighty Joe Young last night?
How drunk were you?
I mean, after the movie, I turned on Documentary Now and just like finished off the bottle.
Oh, okay.
Which, watch Documentary Now if you're listening
to this podcast. I've seen the promos. I should check it out.
They've gone full parody at this point.
I mean, you got a very sincere sounding Helen Mirren.
Oh, yes.
Hosting the show, which makes it even better.
Alien Nation, 1988. Oof.
Yeah.
Wow.
Going back.
Look at these effects, man.
And then we have the TV series.
Is that Mick Jagger? Oh, I'm looking at the TV
series. I was about to say, it's like, yeah, I think the guy you're talking about, the Mick Jagger-looking guy, is the guy who replaced James Caan for the series.
Mandy Patinkin is
there you
thinking
go.
Of.
That's Inigo Montoya.
Damn, I might have to go back and watch that, because that looks like a good hate watch.
And yeah, well, it's funny, because that was like the first film where aliens are deathly allergic to water.
Oh, yeah.
It's like, take that, Shyamalan. We know where you got your idea from.
You can't fool us.
Speaking of After Earth and Will Smith, Men in Black 2.
I wanted to like After Earth so much. I wanted it to be good.
I think Shyamalan wanted to like it, too.
Yeah, that's one that like I've tossed around trying to rescue.
I've seen like clips and trailers, and it's just like, this, I have no interest.
Yeah. Man, oh, like as an idea, there's like two really cool ideas in it, and then there's one really dumb idea, which is using wood to build your spaceships.
Okay, because that,
I don't know if that was a set design choice or if that was like, I don't know.
Like, does the film acknowledge that it's wood?
Yep.
Okay. It's like, it's not trying to pass it off.
Nope.
It's not like Space Mutiny. It's like, oh, we're in a spaceship, even though you can see out the windows in daylight in this factory that's supposed to be a spaceship.
Right. Nope.
Okay. Good to know.
That was weird. So, okay.
Yes.
What I would like to do to fix this movie.
Okay.
I have two paths that I would like you to maybe pick from.
Okay. Choose your own adventure. Got it.
Yes. One, flesh out the villain, the Light of Zartha, like, put a plot underneath of this story.
What a concept.
And then the other is dive back into like old Men in Black stuff and maybe like retone the series.
Hmm.
Here, so the brief thing that I have for each one of those is, if we flesh out the plot, I love the idea of like a plant is looking for light because photosynthesis.
There's
stuff in there that maybe, you know, the Light of Zartha is an ability that she has, and maybe the Serena, what was her name?
Serlina.
Serlina.
Serena is a Mortal Kombat character. I'm not kidding.
any fucking opportunity to bring that.
Hey, it's either Mortal Kombat or Marvel. Sometimes DC.
If she was like maybe like one of the last seeds of her planet, and she's, you know, maybe like picked Earth to be the place to repopulate because there's already plants here, okay. But she needs the light of Zartha.
Going the General Zod route.
Yeah, essentially.
Terraforming.
Because then you can have maybe a more complex villain that by the end it's like, obviously you can't have Earth, let's find you a planet.
Yeah.
We've got eight others in our galaxy. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So the other way to go is like the old Men in Black was essentially the X-Files.
Yeah. From what I've read about it, it seems like it was definitely more along those lines. It's like, Neuralizer, what's that? And I've read like they would use any method to keep things quiet.
And
it's like, Jesus.
So there was Z, X, K, and J, I think, were the four different agents that the series would follow.
All right.
And except they're spelled out. They're not just the letter.
Gotcha.
X is E-C-K-S.
Does he fight Sever?
Rimshot.
Speaking of one of the worst movies.
The thing I like about that series is they, and I, at the end of this podcast, I'm going to tell you the plot of Men in Black International before it comes out. Because
you're predicting it, or
I've got the whole thing. I know exactly what is going to happen across that entire movie.
Okay,
because I know how they wrote it, because it was the same way that I went about writing this pitch.
Oh no,
was literally, people will figure out that this is a comic. Let's go back and like pull in the comic book stuff, which not a bad thing.
Yeah,
because the new one could be really good. The trailer looks fine.
It looks like it matches the initial trilogy.
Oh, yeah.
And it's not a reboot either. Like, there's a part in the trailer where you see, like, these oil paintings, and one of them is of J and K fighting, I think it was the first villain from the first movie.
Yeah.
So I appreciate that. It's technically, it's Men in Black 4.
Right.
But because you have new main characters, like, oh, we're not going to call it 4. It's international.
Right.
So. It's like, there are places outside of New York City.
To go the Men in Black comics route, there's a storyline that kind of arcs over all of them, where one of the agents figures out that the Men in Black organization is evil, which, like, duh. You're the Men in Black. You're allowed to kill people, use any means necessary to figure out. And the other thing that I really like about the comics versus the movies, now that I've like looked into them, is they had everything. Vampires, zombies, werewolves.
That's right.
Ghosts,
I read about that.
Alien. Like, aliens, I know they delved in on that because this was the time to do aliens.
Yeah, definitely in the 90s. This is only like a few years after X-Files blew up.
Yeah.
So, in fact, I think this is more popular than the X-Files movie. Either one of them, really.
Right.
Like, in fact, what was it? Yeah, no, I think it was 2008 we got the second one, I think, that everyone forgot about. The second X-Files that is not Men in Black.
Yeah. So I guess that's what we have to pick. Or I guess we could technically pitch both.
True.
It's our show. We can do whatever we want.
This is very true. I don't know. I think if you want to maintain, and this is something I kind of like half joked with you in the past about doing what I call a bridge repair, in which I would probably just leave like the two films surrounding it as is, but then like trying to fix the film in between them.
Right.
And so that's kind of what I'm leaning more towards, like, fleshing out the villain and such, because otherwise, if we're maintaining 1 and 3 as is, that tone shift is going to be like, oh my god, what the hell?
Right.
So, but I definitely get where you're coming from with that.
Yeah.
And I've been more intrigued because I think even back in the late 90s, like, I was vaguely aware that it was based on a comic series. In fact, I think some of the comic shops in the area were like, oh yeah, look, you know, read this before you see the movie.
Yeah.
Which, you know, obviously people still do today, you know, synergy, money. It's a thing. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, my brain, you know, this past week has been leaning more towards like, okay, what will we actually do with the elements we already have,
right,
to an extent, to just fix what is there.
Yeah.
And I think, like you said, like actually padding out the villain and making them more than just, you know, one dimension, that might help.
Yeah.
I'm really intrigued to see where we can go with that.
That's one big thing. The other thing is, I don't think Tommy Lee Jones should come back.
That's the thing. Of like, I was wondering like what we could do, because I feel like one of the things I would definitely change in that aspect is the whole deneuralizing thing.
Yeah.
Like, what if there actually was a reason why he does come back, but he's not deneuralized? Because that cheapens the ending of the first film to begin with. And second of all, it's like, what if he was still drawn to the light of Zartha from like that embedded memory, and that kind of like turns him into almost like a civilian sidekick throughout the film rather than returning to being an agent right away.
Right.
And the weird thing is, one of the last lines that he says to Rosario Dawson's character is something like, oh, you have your mother's eyes, or something like that. It's like, is she actually his daughter? Did he bang an alien and create the light of Zartha?
Right.
So it's like, it makes me wonder. It's like, maybe Kay's not 100% human either. Maybe he's got like a...
we know about his knees.
There you go. There's evidence. So yeah, like maybe that's like a hint that like the neuralization didn't 100% take. Maybe it's like a Eternal Sunshine type thing where he's getting like flashes of memories.
Yeah.
But he's like subliminally drawn to that pizza place. Like, that's like his hangout after he's done at the post office, but he doesn't really know why.
Right.
So, like, what if we started planting seeds like that where it's like, okay, he's going to end up helping, not because, like, oh, he's an agent again. No, but because, like, those memories are still not erased, just buried in there.
Right.
Because of, like, some sort of gene or something? I don't know. It seems like, you know, retcon writing, but...
Yeah.
Rather than just, like, oh, he's an agent again.
Yeah, I agree. It, like... totally undoes the first movie.
Oh, yeah. Like, the emotional impact of that last scene, gone.
Yeah.
Like, oh, your wife left you after you got back together decades later. It's like, oh. Wow, that whole ending just has, like, no meaning now.
Right. And deneuralizing as an idea sucks.
Yeah. That's your major, like, retcon machine.
And, like, am I wrong or shouldn't he have remembered everything when they finally deneuralized him? Why did the first deneuralization from the Light of Zartha series, that stayed?
It's really convoluted because they say, it's like, oh, you neuralized yourself that one time so you'd forget this thing, but you left clues behind. But then there's that as well. It's like, do you need like a second code of deneuralization to get that one back?
Do you have to like deneuralize for each deneuralization?
Exactly.
Because how many times could he have been deneuralized over the course of his life?
Oh, my God.
It's convenient.
Oh, yeah, no. It's like that line in Deadpool 2. It's like, wow, that's just lazy writing.
Yeah, yeah. that's kind of like the entire thesis here is, wow, they wanted money.
Yeah.
You know, like, just as quickly as they could pump it out, man.
And by the way, speaking of whether or not some characters should return or not, I love Patrick Warburton, but instead of having him at the beginning, why don't we have a cameo with Linda Fiorentino returning and give her a reason to, you know... get out of it, because it's like a throwaway line that, you know, Jay says later on. It's like, oh, well, you know, she wanted to go back to the morgue, blah, blah, blah. That's code for she didn't want to come back.
Yeah.
And we just wrote her out.
Yeah.
And it's just like, it would have been nice to see like one last mission from her. It's like, oh, it's established at the end of the last film that she's now part of the Men in Black.
Or.
And then she's gone.
Even if you can't bring her back, you're in the fucking Men in Black universe. Just like. Hang a lampshade on the recast. Be like, oh yeah, because you remember that mission where we had to change your face? And be like, you know, I actually kind of like the new face better. It's like, oh my God. I 2 minutes, you hang a lampshade on it. Just be like, there it is. There it is. We recast her.
There you go.
It's the same person though. Okay?
Same character.
So like at this point, they're not even, oh my God, think about like Game of Thrones. They don't even, I cannot explain how confused I was when Ed Skrein's character, Daria something.
I don't know. You've watched it, I haven't. But I vaguely know what you're talking about, because I saw one of those, like, Looper articles that popped up. It's like, oh, recast, they thought no one would notice. And it's like...
Oh, man. The new guy they brought in, maybe without his beard, looks a little bit like Ed Skrein, but, like, totally new haircut, totally different eye color, beard change. I had no idea who he was going. I think it's from 3 to 4 or 4 to 5. Okay. I think it's 3 to 4.
Wow.
Where, like, the first time I watched the series, I was like, who the fuck's this guy? Who's that? Because I didn't remember his name. I don't remember half the names in that show.
That's fair.
I'm on my third watch through of the series, and I'm just now, like, getting the side characters' names right. Like, Varys, the bald guy, the bald eunuch.
There you go.
I know his name's Varys now. He was the bald guy the first two watch-throughs to me.
That's fair.
But yeah, like,
but now his name varies.
Yeah.
I don't mean to be an alarmist, but they're making a new Men in Black movie, and I actually want to see it, and I think it's just because of Tessa Thompson and Chris Hemsworth being in it, and no other reason whatsoever. They're rescuing Men in Black? Oh, let's give them the threesome then. Hey, I was going to get sunglasses and wear them, but then I realized I don't fucking care what you guys think. Welcome to Michael's International Business Adventure. Get it? MIB? MIB, yeah. Fuck. We're going to discuss the three Men in Black movies. Men in Black 1 is a good movie. It builds a world, puts some intrigue in it, and it gives you Tommy Lee Jones and Will Smith. Who the hell would have put them together? Their on-screen chemistry is actually really good. Works really well, and it just shows how good of an actor both Tommy Lee and Will Smith are. And I like the way that the movie progressed. Honestly, it still holds up. It's surprisingly well made. Definitely worth a watch before you go see any MIB movies. Like, honestly, it's really good. I would say it's probably a solid, I would say it's a solid 8 out of 10. You know, it's got its problems with the story and some plot devices just don't work, but other than that, it's not bad. Men in Black 2. Men in Black 2 is okay. Honestly, the whole, oh, he's leaving. Oh, we need him back now because the world is in danger. Is really tiresome. Like, super tiresome. And it just doesn't work well for me. And the chemistry kind of suffers from it. And you can tell. They also kind of make Will Smith's character even more of an asshole. The plot didn't really do much for me. So, honestly, I say it's like a 5. Men in Black 3, I actually like Men in Black 3. It's strange how much I like Men in Black 3. And I think it's because I was in the Josh Brolin kick when that movie came out. And so I really appreciate what he brought to Men in Black. And I like the time traveling aspect. Again, just like a Men in Black 2, a part of it just doesn't work right. And the plot devices just aren't there. And I feel like Men in Black 2 and Men in Black 3 suffer from the same thing, which is they didn't realize that one of the best parts of Men in Black 1 was the creepy factor that they had. And so they dial up the comedy factor, which is what International is going to do. And it becomes a popcorn flick instead of a semi-serious, slightly comedic sci-fi horror movie. And International's gonna do the same thing, but I feel Chris Hemsworth and Tessa Thompson's chemistry is a little bit better prepared for that, thanks to Thor Ragnarok. So I feel like that's gonna be a little bit more entertaining to watch than Tommy Lee Jones and Will Smith. No offense, I like them both, but I just don't think they have the same chemistry as Tessa Thompson and Chris Hemsworth do. Story's okay, plot rushes at times, dialogue's okay, graphically it's lazy. There's a lot of laziness to this movie. I would say it's slightly better than Men in Black 2, so it's like a 6 out of 10, but not by much. Again, I'm excited for International. I cannot wait to see it. But the track record has gone this way where they're going to the popcorn side. I'm not a fan of Men in Black being popcorn films. This has been Michael's film, whatever. I'm going to erase your mind or whatever. What do they do in that movie? They erase minds? Or that's like roofies.
Moving on.
Yeah, even if she didn't come back as the actress, keep the character around. That was like a cool, cuz that's the function of Patrick Warburton's character was to like show that things had continued and that now Jay is, you know, kind of in control. He's the new K.
And he keeps, like, booting off his sidekicks because apparently they're not good enough.
Right.
So,
yeah. And, like, which is, like, a cool turn from the first movie where, like, K didn't think he needed Jay. And then, by the end, he kind of proves himself and sticks around. So, yeah, however you want to do it. Keep Linda's character around. Brand new character. That character should stick around. Tommy Lee Jones should be like you were saying, a civilian sidekick. You could even have it be like Jay, like, watches over him. Like, he feels guilty, so he, like, you know, kind of, like, checks in from time to time, and it's this is a thing that his partner brings up, but, like, he doesn't want to explain to his partner.
Yeah. That makes sense.
Excuse me. Something along those lines. Jesus Christ. let's flesh out a villain.
Yes. Now, that being said, would we keep... what's her name? Lara Flynn Boyle, or do you want to recast that?
I feel like she, if she had been given something to do, she would have been great.
Yeah.
There was like a weird, this is a very early 2000s movie.
Yes.
As far as the stuff that happened.
I mean, it was filmed in 2001, so we're pretty close.
Yeah. Thanks, Millennium.
I forgot about that.
Yeah, that the beginning, like her, like picking a human body.
Yes.
This also will play into my Men in Black International thing later.
Which, by the way, that whole picking out a human body thing. Watch Critters 2. It's almost the same gag.
Just yeah,
with less boobs.
Yeah.
So,
and they, I kind of want her character to be male. And then her body to be female. And that allows for like a really funny villain character. Because I was getting hints of that when she's for some reason going through customs in the Men in Black headquarters where she's like, yeah, because I got like a body for modeling. Like if if she doesn't say it like that, my delivery was the way I wanted it to be.
So essentially you want her appearance, but like the voice and personality of Johnny Knoxville's character.
Yeah, yeah, kind of.
Just blend them into one character.
Might as well.
Yeah.
And especially if we're going with...
Speaking of early 2000s.
Oh my God. Yeah.
I think that was the same year we got Jackass the movie, by the way.
Oh, really?
I could be wrong. I want to say it was 2002.
What a busy guy.
Oh, yeah.
He borders on being a good actor sometimes, too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's fair.
I've got, like...
It's amazing, like, how much he's actually done.
Oh, my God.
Like, oh, yeah, he was also in an Arnold movie.
Yeah!
As, like, the sidekick.
I think there's, like... There's probably a script sitting on the desk somewhere in A24 right now that would be, like... they're looking this way, but if, like, somebody dropped a note of, like, cast Johnny Knoxville, everyone would turn this way and go, oh! He could do that!
I'm seeing the A24 logo in my head right now.
Yep.
Those rainbow streaks turning into the white logo.
They know their aesthetic for sure.
Yeah.
And I think they could make a Johnny Knoxville mobile for him to take off and be like a serious actor in. He genuinely tries sometimes. I saw Action Point and like
yes, that one.
There's no plot in that movie.
I could tell. And it's hilarious because it is actually based upon a real park.
Yeah.
And I've read seen like the documentary with like that horror story. So it should have worked, and apparently it didn't. And apparently he had more injuries on that film than he did the Jackass movies.
I believe it.
Which is, like, nuts.
They beat the crap out of everybody. And what's disappointing about that one is, like, I feel like the director didn't know that he was making a late 90s, like, Little Rascals movie, but with adults.
Yeah.
And they should have just totally, like, gone in hard on that structure and then just poked fun and, like, but also they can, like... fucking drink and throw their bodies into walls.
By the way.
Yeah, like, they were almost there. There was almost a movie. But there's a scene at the end where Johnny Knoxville has, like, a heart-to-heart with his daughter. There's actually a couple scenes where he has heart-to-hearts with his daughter that, like, him being a dad in real life really informed that in a way that I was like, you're not Johnny Knoxville right now. And that's good. So, I have hope for him.
There you go.
Yeah, let's combine his character into Serlina.
There we go.
I like that a lot. Yeah, I think she could have, like, given that kind of character, like, you know, pretend to be Danny DeVito in Taxi, but, like, look like you.
Oh, my God.
That would be so much fun.
Wow.
But, okay, why is she on Earth? That's what we need to...
Yes. I do like where you were headed earlier about, you know, plant, photosynthesis, light. Now... Do we want to go the route, and like I said, it's kind of a general zodding it, in which her species, her kind, was definitely more about, like, repopulation upon multiple planets, and, like, that's part of the reason why they were wiped out, because they were a threat to other life forms.
Yeah. So. Yeah. So, like, she's a spore, essentially, right? Like,
pretty much, yeah.
And Dandelion, the planet, where, like, you, mm-hmm. once you take over the whole thing, you grow out and then you just kind of, like, release seeds everywhere and see where they end up. And then maybe, like, they, you know, maybe they had a war at some point.
Yeah.
That, like,
a war of the spores.
Spore wars.
Spore wars.
Yeah, so the spore wars resulted in Serlina being, oh, maybe that's how you start the movie off.
Oh, yeah, your prologue, if you will.
Maybe, because there's another thing I want, another thread I'd like to drop in here, where someone in MIB is working with someone, maybe this is like a B-plot or something, I don't know, a terraforming machine.
Gotcha.
Because I want, by the end of the movie, to get to a point where it's like, hey, if we send you off with this MacGuffin device that terraforms planets and with the light of Zartha.
Yeah.
I almost wanted to say Martha, and then I was like, Martha!
Why did you say that name? Every time at work, if I have to call a patient, first name's Martha, I just have, you know, Batfleck with the green glow of kryptonite in my head.
Oh my god. I'm so...
It never goes old.
I'm so excited for the Godzilla universe to deliver on the Batman v Superman model.
Save Mothra. That's our new joke.
I love it. I love it. Just for them to start off King of the Monsters with, like, literally, I could cut the scenes of Godzilla from 2014 that they're looking back at in the new movie.
Oh my god.
With the scenes from Man of Steel and Batman v Superman.
So yeah, really it, is the same thing.
It would look like one cohesive story.
Come on, Warner Brothers. Stop it.
Guys, you don't have to remind us of the last movie. We saw that one. That's why we're here. Oh, Jesus. Yeah, so it started off with like maybe the end of the Spore Wars.
Yeah.
Ooh, that's how you make a complex villain.
Okay.
Serlina makes this super tough choice of like basically self-destructing everyone else to wipe out their enemy and launch as like one last spore that could hopefully
gotcha
take over somewhere.
Okay.
And it happens just as they figure out what planet the light of Zartha's on.
Bingo. Now we're getting somewhere. And our movie's no longer 80 minutes without credits.
Right. Jesus. It felt so much longer. It felt so much
that
longer.
That was like when we were talking about Hush. It was the same thing.
Yeah.
You got a movie that's like 80 minutes. It feels like it's 3 hours.
Yeah.
And it's like, I just want to watch Endgame again, which actually is 3 hours, but doesn't feel like it.
Pacing, people. Pacing. Tommy Lee Jones shows up 27 minutes into the movie.
I feel like he was already done after the first one, which is why he doesn't show up for like a third of the film in the second one.
Yeah.
And he sets out the bulk of three. It's Thanos doing the bulk of the work in Men in Black 3 as young K.
Yeah.
So.
That's right. It was Josh Brolin.
Yeah.
His impression of Tommy Lee Jones. Like, of some of the best like celebrity doing celebrity impressions we've had recently. Unbeatable. Unbeatable.
I remember when the first trailer came out for that, I'm like, oh my god. Like, that's pretty spot. Even the squint. I was like, Jesus.
So if we're redoing Tommy Lee Jones movies with Josh Brolin, and then we're redoing Harrison Ford movies with Chris Pratt, does that mean that we could potentially get
The Fugitive?
The Fugitive with Chris Pratt and Josh Brolin.
I'd watch it.
I didn't kill my wife!
I don't care.
I'd watch it. To be honest, I would. Oh, although believing Chris Pratt as a doctor would be a little difficult.
Mm, yeah. That's
the one-armed man.
And then let's not forget, we have the pseudo-sequel co-starring Iron Man. Which everyone forgets that he was in U.S. Marshals. A lot of people forget about U.S. Marshals in general.
I don't, because that was one of the few like action VHSs we had in my home as a kid.
Now, I can't remember. Would you consider that more of a sequel or a spinoff? Because I feel like Tommy Lee Jones' character from The Fugitive, even though he was like the co-lead, is essentially the main character in U.S. Marshals. And Wesley Snipes was the quote-unquote fugitive in that
one. Yes, yes. Yeah. But it's his whole team comes back. Mm. All the actors from his team, except for the one that died, come back in U.S. Marshals.
And then wasn't Robert Downey Jr. like the hidden villain or something like that?
Yeah.
I think like the last fights between him and Wesley Snipes.
Yeah,
because it's been years since I've seen it, though.
He's trying
Iron Man versus Blade.
Yeah, Wesley Snipes is... like trying to clear his name, and it's RDJ covering up something, because that's why, like, when they finally get him, RDJ goes to like murder him in the hospital room.
Yeah,
and they end up leaving and fighting more. He gets speaking of characters who get the crap beat out of them, Wesley Snipes might be able to top Johnny Knoxville for U.S. Marshals.
That's fair.
He, like, by the end of that movie, I've never seen someone earn the, like, I'm in a hospital bed, please leave me alone, as much as he did in that movie.
Oh, man.
That's one I should go back and watch. I haven't seen that in forever.
Yeah, that was the era where, it's like we joke about Liam Neeson being in, like, all the not Taken movies that feel like a Taken film. It was the same thing with Tommy Lee Jones in that era, where it's like the not Fugitive films. I mean, granted, Fugitive and U.S. Marshals are connected.
Yeah.
But then you had, like, Double Jeopardy and The Hunted and, like, all these other movies where you felt like he was playing the same character, but he wasn't. So.
Double Jeopardy, the end of that movie is like, we had to contrive this so much for her to be able to get away with murder.
Oh my God.
And still be likable as a character. I don't know how they pull it off.
I never actually saw that one, but I did see the trailer. It's like, wait, that's a thing?
Yes.
I'm like, yeah, that makes sense. Okay.
Well, it only works because he faked his own death.
Yes.
And so she can kill him and not be charged with it because he doesn't exist as a person.
It's like, wow, that is convoluted.
And because she was tried for his murder.
Yeah.
That really was basically The Fugitive.
Yeah. Like I said, I feel like every film he was doing after that was like a different version of The Fugitive with different characters, aside from U.S. Marshals.
He can be a very charismatic actor.
Oh, yeah. Watch Under Siege.
Oh,
who knew that he would be a good villain in a Steven Seagal movie?
True.
From the director of The Fugitive. Yeah, Andrew Davis.
I'm glad that he looked at Steven Seagal and was like, I could make a movie with that guy.
I mean, it's hilarious because a lot of people say that is probably Seagal's best movie.
Really?
So, yeah, it's like he reached his peak, and then after Under Siege, it's like,
I know it's one of his most popular. When's he going to join the MCU?
Seagal?
Yeah.
His time has passed hard.
I don't know, man.
Warner Brothers years were his best years. After Exit Wounds, as enjoyably stupid as that movie is, I think he went straight to DTV hell after that, and which he like barely tries. Like, you want we give Bruce Willis a lot of shit for not trying. You really want to see the epitome of not trying? Watch virtually any straight-to-video Steven Seagal movie at this point. Oh my God. It's like he's dubbed by someone else for ADR. He's doubled for like even basic movements now.
Yeah.
It's, oh my God.
It's not a good look, man. No. Not a good look.
But anyway, Men in Black 2.
Can we make him an alien in Men in Black 2?
That's far more conceivable.
Just pull the Michael Jackson cameo out, drop in Seagal. That would make sense.
I can be Agent S.
Also, Martha Stewart in the background of one of the shots was hilarious.
Yeah, I think that was like right after Johnny Knoxville pretends to like have a heart attack or something, which is so stupid and random. It's like, oh, cleavage, oh, my heart. Really?
Well, he's sharing it with another head, so
that's true.
It's a little weaker.
We'll go with that.
That's why we're combining these characters.
Alien logic.
There's so many ideas that I know are going to be in Men in Black International that I've like genuinely.
These are all the ideas we should have had for two. But
grab and use.
We're doing it for four.
Okay. So yeah, we'll go from that opening. We're basically Man of Steel the beginning with like the first 20 minutes doesn't.
We are turning Serlina into Zod, pretty much.
I'm okay with it, honestly.
Yeah.
Because like as good as Shannon, Michael Shannon. Is that the name of the actor?
That sounds about right.
As good as Michael Shannon is, and he is a phenomenal actor.
Oh, yeah.
And he crushed that Zod role. Zod as Danny DeVito in a hot woman's body. Not gonna lie. Yeah. Pretty great comedic villain.
I could see that. Oh, my God.
Look at these bazongas.
Oh, my God.
Just have Danny DeVito dub the whole thing. Oh, if God. We can't have him as Pikachu.
I was about to say, that's why. It's a revolt against Detective Pikachu.
Then here's what we do. We cut from that to Earth, and it's Tommy Lee Jones gardening.
Okay.
And we get to see, like, he's basically happy since the last movie. Yeah. And then we kind of, like, pull out, and there's Jay and his new partner. TB decided if it's a new... I love Patrick Warburton.
Yeah.
He was not good in this.
Yeah, no, speaking of not having a lot to do, I mean, I did get some chuckles from him, but this was in like that weird phase where he didn't really have much to do in general. I mean,
right.
This was post Putty from Seinfeld.
You're going to neuralize me. as a scene it worked, but like just Patrick Warburton crying doesn't work.
And it's like you're making a scene here.
And anytime I see him, all I want to scream is, do the Joe voice! Peter!
Peter, oh my God! Bonnie!
So we pull out from Tommy Lee Jones.
You don't have a poop sack? Bonnie, you lied to me about the poop sack! Okay, I'm done.
Oh, geez, I love Family Guy. A little too much for someone my age. Yeah, so we like pull back from Tommy Lee Jones. We see Jay and his partner, and we see that, like, kind of, you know, he misses Kay, but like he also is happy that he's happy.
Exactly.
And he's just kind of checking in. And then they get called away for the, like, the first mission.
Yeah.
Maybe this is where we bring the terraforming thing in too. It's like an alien stole something from another alien, and, you know, so we get another chase to start off, and that we see how much Jay has learned since the first movie. We kind of like reparallel that with, like, instead of like chasing someone for 16 blocks, we now get like him outthinking and his partner now doing the Jay thing from the first one.
Yeah.
Where he, let's cast somebody. Let's just say it won't be Linda's character.
Yeah.
She still exists. We can maybe check in with her. She can maybe be pulled into the plot.
Yeah.
Wouldn't it be funny if she was running Men in Black now?
There you go.
Yeah. Who would... Let's pair new Jay, somber Jay as K, with a good pairing from that time. Because another thing, in case nobody knew this, Men in Black International originally was going to be 23 Jump Street.
That's right. Yeah, for some reason there's going to be a crossover.
Well, the crossover's done.
Yeah.
But they kept the writer who was doing the crossover to write Men in Black International.
Yeah.
And that guy's great at these buddy cop duos. So let's pick a fun Will Smith duo.
Well, it's ironic that you're saying that because one of the things I actually read from Sonnenfeld, the director, was saying that he realized a mistake that he learned from Wild Wild West was making Will Smith more of the straight man as opposed to the comedian. And so that is the tricky thing because you're trying to find someone to bounce off of Will Smith, but Will Smith is usually the one who does the bouncing.
Right.
So that's tricky. But like you said, we're maintaining initially the somber JSK.
Yeah.
Shoot, I am trying to think of someone around that time period.
To me, the whole straight man versus comedy guy, that works often.
Yeah.
It's pretty tried and true. But there are versions of, like, two big personalities that don't mesh well.
Also true.
What's that Adam Sandler movie where he's a fugitive or he's, like, on the run and he's being chased down by one of the...
I don't know. I try to block out most later Adam Sandler movies.
the brothers that do the scary movies.
Oh no! Wait, so this is 90s Adam Sandler. You're talking about Bulletproof.
Bulletproof.
Yes,
there we go.
With Damon
Wayans. Wayans is where I was trying to get. Thank you. I have a computer right next to me, and I refuse to touch it.
It's the principle of the thing.
Yeah, Damon Wayans. Both of them are funny. Both of them are serious at times, and it's just two big personalities bouncing off of each other.
Yeah.
So what if we went maybe a little more that way, where by the end of this movie, even if Kay is brought back into the Men in Black in some capacity, this other big personality can have their own partner and like graduate through on down the series.
It's possible.
Chris Hemsworth wasn't doing anything at this time, was he? It would be hilarious if this was his like origin movie.
How old would he have been at that point? I think he's only like a few years older than me, and I was still in high school this came out.
This is something I will Google.
That's fair. How old? Because I want to say he was like 82, so he might have been like 19 or so.
He's 35.
There you go. So it's been, 17 years?
Yes, he was born in 83.
18 years ago is when they filmed
it. So he would have been an 18-year-old kid.
Yeah.
At this time. Although, in Film Rescue World, we can pick any version of you we want.
True.
It's all imaginary.
This is very true.
I don't know. That's not a terrible idea.
So plant the seed for what would become international.
Which is hilarious, because this is a movie about a villain that wants to plant a seed. You see what I did
like,
there?
I saw where you were going. I was like, I'm just going to wait, because I know where he's headed with this.
So young Chris... Actually, that works out well for... this too.
Yeah.
Because then in Men in Black International, he's this established agent. It's like, yeah, he learned from Jay.
Yeah. Not just someone who just popped up.
I might have to add that to my predictions thing. I'll put that in the unlikely but definitely could happen category.
Like the backstory as to how he got started.
Yeah.
Okay.
The Men in Black exchange program. Not a terrible idea. Okay, yeah. So that's where we start out. It's Chris Hemsworth, Will Smith. Not a terrible pairing, I'm not going to lie.
No, it'd be interesting to see an 18-year-old Chris Hemsworth in the role.
I mean...
Because like his first big role was like Star Trek for 5 minutes.
Yeah.
So, because, yeah, I think even he said recently, like, prior to that, he had, like, next to nothing.
Right.
So, and then Thor happened, and the rest is history.
And then they discovered all the Hemsworths, and... Yeah. Their poor older brother who can only get on TV shows...
Wasn't he the one that played like fake Thor in the little yeah, that's what I thought.
In the skit.
Which I didn't even realize till after the fact. It's like, oh, that's another Hemsworth shit. All
yep,
right.
That's another Hemsworth. And Matt Damon.
For reasons.
Wasted in the MCU.
He's like, you're gonna get me to the MCU, I'm gonna be fake Loki.
You know what would be hilarious though? Mm. If the Asgardians that have survived, he's one of them, he just then when we get our Asgardians of the Galaxy movie, we can just have whoever Matt Damon was for that one little bit in Thor 3.
Like he's just some thespian who doesn't know how to fight.
It's not. That's a funny character. That would be great.
Waititi would totally bring him back. I would see that.
Absolutely. Is Waititi doing 4?
That's the weird
he's
thing.
He's doing
like,
Akira right now.
So I've heard. Well, the funny thing about that is, and this is smart, he says it's not going to be a remake of the anime. He's going straight to the manga. It's like, all right, so it's a re-adaptation.
I mean,
that's fair.
If anyone's not familiar, Akira, go watch it. Probably one of the best animated movies ever made. However, the manga, like, there's 4 giant stories happening that do not come out very much in the movie.
He might have to Dune it. We'll see what happens.
Or
we'll get multiple films. Might get a trilogy. Who knows?
I would likely assume a trilogy.
Starring Scarlett Johansson. That joke will never die. Thank you, Ghost in the
Neither
Shell.
Neither will her career, apparently, no matter what she
exactly.
does.
Exactly.
I want to know who her agent is.
Yeah.
It's just like, yeah, we'll do that one. I've been trying to get rid of her for years.
Oh, my God.
Just quit.
Why isn't it working?
Just quit. She's bulletproof. From there,
yes,
the movie can, I mean, so we don't want to like strip what makes a Men in Black movie, which is like you take your two big leads and then you bounce them off of like funny versions of what if alien situations.
Yeah.
One of my favorites coming from the third one, Bill Hader as,
Andy Warhol yeah.
as an alien.
Oh yeah. Was he an alien or an agent?
He was an alien.
It's been a while since I've seen that. I thought he was like an agent in disguise. Like, why am I still here?
No, because it's like a sexuality joke that comes out where he's like, somebody says something about the girls, and I forget exactly what the context is, but he's basically like, well, not where I'm from. And the idea being like...
I should probably watch the third one.
Just
again,
an androgynous alien species that will just bang anything, which is like, that's Andy Warhol.
Not it's like all these people are getting excited about a painting of soup.
Not, I think that of these, and then of these, those situations, Monk as an alien.
Ah, yes.
Probably the worst one of the bunch to me. It felt like the guy, the newspaper stand guy from the first one, or the pawn shop owner, whoever it was, I forget, that had like a smaller head.
Oh yeah.
Jeeves. Sure.
Jeeves, I think.
That sounds right.
Yeah.
I don't know why.
Because, they brought him back for the second one, but not the third one. It's like, hey, now we just have a generic pawn shop guy with a time machine thing.
Yeah.
So it's like, why didn't you bring back Jeeves? That would have made more sense.
The fact that you know any of these characters' names is amazing.
I don't remember all of them, but I'm trying.
So, yeah, like, I don't want to take that aspect out, but it would be really cool if, like, I guess I'm looking for like an A and B plot of Rising Action where you get the terraforming thing is like the MacGuffin they're chasing, and then the Serlina going after the light of Zartha, and then they kind of like keep interweaving at these different alien points along the way where you get these like clash situations. Because I'm thinking of the first one, Vincent D'Onofrio's character just kept showing up as they were doing their investigation.
True.
Because they were, like, right on his heels.
He went full Mr. X.
Yeah. I like that as an idea that, like, you know, maybe it's a dual thing. Maybe, like, what if she, the Light of Zartha, was working on the terraforming tech?
Hmm.
I mean, does her not knowing about this weird universe add to her character, or is
tough like she thinks she's human but doesn't realize that she's not, because that's what we currently have.
Yeah. Oh yeah, that could be a cool, especially if you want to get into like the maybe Kay is her father thing,
because like I said, there's like a faint implication of that towards the end of the movie.
Okay, yeah, so she thinks she's human, but she's also in on, like, the alien world and doesn't know that she's part alien.
Yeah.
Because I'm trying to give each character, like, something they want, right?
A hint of purpose.
And, yeah, exactly. And if her purpose is, I'm working on this tech that, you know, well, she was looking for her father initially, not knowing that it's Kay. And in that investigation, figuring out vaguely that it is Kay, finds out about the alien world. And instead of freaking, she, like, starts to situate herself in it and becomes very interested in alien technology.
What if she was, like, sleepwalk working on the tech? Like, when she goes to sleep as a human, she wakes up as an alien working on the tech. And then it's like, why have I been so tired lately?
What if that's it? What if Kay gives up his daughter to host this plant thing? And so it's like a symbiotic relationship like that, where like she really is human, but then when she goes to sleep, this alien's able to like use her exoskeleton and work on this thing.
We got something.
We're dipping our toes in convoluted.
Seeds are being planted.
But like this universe kind of lends itself to being complex.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I like that as an idea.
What?
No,
for those who can't see, the fingers are going up as the ideas are coming.
The Serlina, I'm gonna be pissed if I do this entire podcast calling her that, and that's not what her name was.
But I'm
too proud to look it up.
All right, I'll look it up then. I'm like 90% certain it's Serlina.
She can track the alien, but it disappears whenever she turns human.
Oh, there you go. So she's got like that small window every night.
Yeah.
Interesting. That's actually kind of scary. that's a little horror film. Like, I like that.
Yeah, yeah. Because if you're being chased by like an actual monster that only knows where you are when you're sleeping, it's a little Freddy Krueger-esque, but...
Yes. Actually, you're not wrong. I mean, it's not like invading your dreams, but still it takes advantage of when you're asleep. And when your human form's asleep.
And it having it be a Danny DeVito attractive woman.
Oh my God.
That's what makes it funny. That's where it's like, it kind of maybe like takes the edge off of that scariness.
A bit, yeah.
Okay. So she's now a fully fleshed out character. That's awesome.
Yes.
Like that. Serlina, I mean, you know, basically like seeing, she becomes like a third big personality to bounce off of other aliens, right?
Yeah.
That's great. I love that. And especially if like, I even like the idea of her having to go through customs. Like maybe, like she knows about this world and she wants to do it like correctly.
Yeah.
But she's also like maybe making a fuss or causing trouble as she's like trying to find the light.
Of course.
Yeah. So the light is like maybe like a symbiotic alien that normally it's symbiotic to the plant people.
Okay.
But they were able to like put it in. What was Rosario Dawson's character's name?
See, now that I can't remember.
God damn it. I should just pull up the Wikipedia page. Yeah, that would help
you're
me
saying
so
I know
much.
All the names, but I can't remember hers.
You,
I just
you
remember,
the aliens.
Rosario Dawson.
The aliens, not the people.
Not the humans.
Wow, she's like fifth on the list. She's listed under Johnny Knoxville.
It was a different time back then.
Her name was Laura. Oh. And it is Serlina.
Yeah. Uh-huh. See, I did see that, but I didn't want to confirm because you're being so proud.
Yes. Well, I mean, I stumbled upon it. Also, Nick Cannon was in this movie, which, like...
I'm trying to remember that now.
During the Will Smith dead eye scene that I was telling you about earlier, there's a dead alien going through customs, and Will Smith goes, "Tell me why there's a dead blah, blah, blah going through customs right now," and then switch around, "Nick Cannon, I'm sorry, sir, I'll get rid..."
God,
that was Nick
that.
Cannon.
Sweet Jesus.
Totally forgot. Also, Biz Markie was...
I do remember that.
...the beatbox alien, which... I loved that.
Yes.
That little bit, just because it was like... That was probably the most fun Will Smith was at any point in the movie.
True. Boo! Boo chicka boom boo chicka.
I loved that. basically, what we need to decide now is... Are Jay and... I'm trying to think of what letter we should give Chris Hemsworth. I don't know what his is going to be. I think they're going to be M and N in international.
I can't remember. I've seen the trailers, but I can't remember.
Okay, well, the M could make sense, too, actually, because if he's J, Agent K, then Linda's character would have been L.
I actually think she was L. I could be wrong.
And then, so he'd be M.
Works. You can only have 26 agents.
Works for me. well, then you get alien... letters, right?
Sure. Snarky and Florgan and Flavlin.
Yes. Yeah, so we get... I'm trying to decide if they should be going after the terraforming technology as it's like kind of popping on and off people's radar, or if they should be chasing down Serlina as she's like wreaking havoc in New York.
Well, I feel like the third act would be like a bit of both, like trying to stop her
and also
keep the tech away.
Yeah.
Now, the thing is, like, do they want to just destroy the tech or do they want to actually still like use it for good?
I think my thought was like it's just illegal.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's not MIB doesn't want it for anything specifically. They
and
just,
certainly not on Earth.
Right. Yeah. And yeah, they just want it to not be made.
Yeah.
And maybe that's it. So maybe it starts off with them investigating like a weird purchase history of like we think somebody's going to be building a terraforming machine based on these like black market tips that we're getting.
Damn it, Amazon.
Right. Also, he found a deneuralizer on eBay.
That's right. God damn it.
I'm telling you, I watched it twice. Like there were some things I had to like, yep, that really did happen.
Yep.
Yeah,
that's just lazy.
So that's where it starts off, and then maybe the middle is where we get the first like interaction between Serlina and Laura, where it like shit pops off, and now like Men in Black is involved, and they're like maybe after each chase they're like trying to figure out who Serlina is, but then they also have this other, so they're kind of like balancing cases, and that you could even put that into like Will Smith's character of like maybe he's trying so hard to fill Kay's shoes that he's like biting off more than he can chew at this point, and Chris Hemsworth M character could be like pointing that out and be like we gotta pick a path here. We gotta do one, let some other agents do other stuff. I like that so far. Because then, I mean, the third act is going to be your blockbuster third act.
Of course.
all the situations come to a head. We, you know, you get the big chase, the vine creature. One of my notes was Little Shop of Horrors.
Ah, yes.
Have you seen the apocalyptic ending?
I've seen parts of it. I haven't actually watched the whole thing. But, yeah, I do remember, like, that was one of those things where it's, like, it was gone for years. And it's like, oh, we found it.
Yeah.
Director's cut.
I would love for, like, the final act to be, like, kind of like that. Like, yeah. the apocalyptic end of Little Shop of Horrors, which gives them a reason to neuralize all of New York.
Ah, yes.
Because I get it. It's silly. It's a little contrived. Obviously, not everyone would be looking at the Statue of Liberty at the same time.
No.
However, it's the Men in Black universe. I'll allow it.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, if we need something to exist, it exists.
Exactly.
That's how they work.
Yeah, because like when you have these kinds of, even the Avengers, to a degree, know, any stories like this, it is really all about like character development and character interactions. And a, like a firm plot. Anything else you can contrive. The Infinity Stones. I'm sorry. The what?
The Infinity MacGuffins.
Yeah, exactly. Like the MacGuffin is almost never part of it. And then this ending actually makes the MacGuffin useful at the end because it's like, yeah, you just give this device to her, and then the alien symbiote within you, they all can like fuck off to Mars and like.
Get your ass to Mars.
That would be kind of like a cool ending shot, like the re-terraformed Earth Mars. You know what I mean? Because like I'm thinking the device would be Man of Steel-esque. If we're gonna borrow from Man of Steel, might as well continue.
Exactly.
plugs into both ends of the planet.
One side of Metropolis, the other side in like India.
Yeah,
that's how that works.
Could you figure out where Metropolis is based on where Superman goes?
I didn't put that much thought into it.
Did they actually spin the globe to be like, does this make sense?
That's what Superman's supposed to do. Didn't you see Superman
1?
The original, yeah. Or the Richard Donner cut of 2?
Right.
It's like, screw it, I didn't film anything else. We're just going to reuse this ending.
Right.
Screw it. To hell with Richard Lester's kiss amnesia thing.
Right. Oh, my God. I mean, that which, sue me, but that's on par for old Superman. Superman had whatever powers he needed.
You're not wrong. In fact, I remember the old Nintendo game, like, collecting all the powers, like, the whole laundry list of powers that he had. That one wasn't on there, but might as well have been.
Sure. You know what I mean? He can do whatever he needs to do.
Yeah.
There's like a Superman quote that's like, oh, yeah, I think it was like, No, I remember what it was. Superman versus Goku, who would win? And the end result was like, Goku has limits because they have a power system.
Yeah.
Superman's just as strong as the story needs him to be.
You're not wrong.
I mean, again, it's at the end of the day, you're trying to do characters and fun stories and not like define exactly the limits of Superman's strength in canon forever. Like, we're doing Superman soon. I'll go into it on that one.
That's going to be an interesting one, by the way.
I've never met Jesse. I'm very excited to be the person he meets that's like, yep, I like Man of Steel.
I'm going to be the awkward man in the middle because, like, I don't hate it. I can deal with it. I have my problems with it, but I also enjoyed it. Oh, it's a very different story with Jesse. Like, he got after me just for, like, acknowledging that it exists and I don't hate it. Like, I remember he gave me crap for that. So, like, when you go into it, I'm just going to be sitting here like, all right, this is going to be interesting, and go.
As long as he takes it from, like, the, you're welcome to have your own wrong opinion, I guess.
Yeah, that's definitely what it's going to be.
Because that's where I am. Like, I have issues with it, of course, but I liked enough of it.
Yeah. I definitely have my thoughts as well, which I will save for then.
Yeah.
I didn't hate it, although I didn't like it as much as I thought I would.
Yeah. I think
they leaned heavily into the whole produced by Christopher Nolan thing too.
A lot of
people forget about that. I was like, "Oh yeah, by the way, he produced the first one."
I think
one.
That hurt the movie.
True. Because a lot of people expected like Batman Begins or The Dark Knight or something. And that's not what Superman's supposed to be.
Well, that and that's not Zack Snyder's tone.
No. No.
Like, no. I'm also not naive enough to be in the camp of like, well, if you just recolor edit and put John Williams' score in, it's perfect. It's like, no. Literally, if one little restructure helps the whole movie, where essentially if like Superman was figuring out that, yeah, you can't like torch a city to fight people, and him like have to learn how to like save civilians and prevent disaster.
But it's okay, because in Batman v Superman, they fought on an island where they announced to the audience that there's no civilians on there.
Yeah.
That's totally fine.
Right.
That's not pandering at all. But we'll save that for another time.
Yeah. Not that naive. I don't know. There's not, going back to Men in Black 2.
M-I-I-B.
There's not a lot you would have to do to make this an halfway interesting movie.
True.
I would love if like the Vincent D'Onofrio's bug people came back at the end, or maybe they're the race that like the plant people were warring with or something. Just like
nice connection to the first one.
Right. Yeah. Like re-cameo something like that. Maybe that's what it is. Maybe they were like on their way to Earth to avenge Vincent D'Onofrio.
And they ended up in a counter war.
Yeah, and they ended up having to fight their way through the plant people, and then the plant people just nukes everything. Now they're the new bad guy.
There you go.
That's a pretty good handoff. I mean, that's...
You thought this villain was bad. This one killed that one.
Right, yeah.
Or that one's race, I should say.
Yeah, it definitely ups the stakes. I think my issue with 3 is the time travel aspect. Mm. And Men in Black is the perfect universe for time travel, but I still hate it. Explain that. Why do I still hate the time travel and the best like platform for time travel?
Yeah.
Oof. So, I don't know where I'll cut this in. But I promise to predict Men in Black International.
Okay.
Based on what I've learned so far.
Mm-hmm.
Also, based on what I know about how this writer writes movies, specifically 22 Jump Street, which, again, confirmed that initially there was going to be a crossover of these two.
I do remember that. That was, like, touted for a while.
Yeah. This guy's whole thing is looking at what a movie is as he's writing it to comment on that thing. So you look at 21 Jump Street, and it's the whole meta commentary is like, are reboots worth it? Are reboots good? You know,
that's quite meta.
Can you do new things? Down to having Johnny Depp come back as his character from the show undercover.
And yeah, that's kind of what I was saying earlier. It's like, this isn't like a traditional reboot. I feel like the phrase that's thrown around a lot, especially in case like this, is soft reboot.
Yeah.
Because it still acknowledges the other films.
Yeah.
Like a true reboot in like its purest term is that it's a remake in the hopes of starting a new franchise.
Yeah.
But soft reboot, it's like, hey, we're hoping to bring life back into it, but we're still acknowledging the other ones.
Right.
So, kind of like what this sort of Ghostbusters 3 is going to be.
Yeah.
Which is, all the casting news was coming out this past week, but that's a story for another time.
Sure. So, with that being said, and then, like, 22 Jump Street was obviously, like, a meta-commentary on sequels.
Of course.
Which, down to, if that idea hadn't been driven home yet, by the time you finish that movie, the post-credits thing might be the only joke that tops James Gunn's 5 post-credits scenes.
Like I said, I haven't seen either of them, but I am like well aware of like the 23 Jump Street, 24 Jump Street, like every number. I'm like, oh my God.
Yeah. So, based on trailers and based on what we know about the writer and based on what I've learned about the Men in Black series, here's the plot of Men in Black International.
Okay.
Chris Hemsworth's character, M or whatever it is, we'll put my light prediction, he will have been trained by Jay, potentially even a Will Smith cameo. Wouldn't be shocked at a Will Smith cameo. If I'm right, you owe me a dollar. Go to the Patreon.
Go to Patreon.
Patreon and give me a dollar on Patreon. You owe me. But that's a side bet.
Yes.
His character is going to be fishy. I think there's going to be a setup of you can't trust Chris Hemsworth, and he's going to have to prove himself by the end of the story. The girl whose name I can't, Tessa Thompson's character,
Valkyrie.
She is going to uncover a plot within the Men in Black. Because she finds the Men in Black. We know this from the trailers, right?
Yeah.
She's able to track them down and find them. And then because of that, she's invited to join. But then she gets sent to London. And this is where the international part of it comes in, right?
Gotcha.
And it's Emma Thompson that plays the head of America.
Yes.
Yes, that sounds right. That plays the head of Men in Black America, right? She's going to, and this is why.
Because I remember her in the third one. Like, that's another connecting fiber.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So she's going to be America head Men in Black, Liam Neeson's head of UK Men in Black, right? And then we know that the villains are the Hive, which is like a shape-shifting kind of villain thing.
The Skrulls.
Essentially. So what's going to happen is, Tessa Thompson and Chris Hemsworth are going to team up. They're not going to trust each other initially. There's going to be a third outside agent in the UK that is going to really push this you can't trust Chris Hemsworth narrative. Okay. To be revealed that he is one of the Hive, working from within the Men in Black to basically like shape and control the world. They have all the tech. They know all the aliens.
The lizard people.
He's going to take over the world. Now, within this prediction, I have sub-predictions.
Okay.
Emma Thompson or Liam Neeson, one of them will be part of the Hive. My money's on Emma, because I think it's going to also be kind of set up that Liam Neeson isn't trustworthy, and then he will also have a turn, but he also, I could easily see having a double turn where he's part of the Hive. If it's both of them, I'll be disappointed.
Yes. I'm more hopeful of it would be Liam, only because since we've already established her previously, that gets kind of tricky. I mean, granted, she was, what was she on, like one scene in Men in Black 3?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like the memorial to Zed, I think.
Yeah.
That's all I remember, at least. So, that could work. But yeah, like you said, if it's both, then...
If it's both, I'm let down. My money's on Emma, because these movies tend to like set up your villain very, very early and then give you just nothing on them until they twist at the end.
You're not wrong.
So it's going to be... this will be the most espionage-y of the films.
Makes sense when you're going international.
Right. And the plot of Chris Hemsworth and Tessa Thompson is their mission's going to be tracking down some kind of MacGuffin weapon thing.
Of course.
As you do. Yeah, which the reveal will be not that the Hive want the weapon, but the Hive already have the weapon to some degree.
The MacGuffin in Black.
Yeah, and they already run the Men in Black, and so there's going to have to be a big takedown restructuring by the end.
So essentially, the Men in Black will be S.H.I.E.L.D. and the Hive will be Hydra.
Yep.
And there you have it. We've got Men in Black International.
That's Men in Black International. So I think the meta commentary that's going to be here is like the whole Passing of the Torch movie.
Yeah.
Is essentially what this is, right?
Yeah.
Without the actual actors to come back and like J&K hand off to the Men in Black International. True. They could. They very well could.
Yes.
Would not be
more
shocked.
More likely J than K.
Yes. Oh, yeah, yeah.
Tommy Lee Jones, you can't get for a day for that.
I don't see
point.
Tommy Lee.
The fact that you've got him in any capacity in the sequels was kind of amazing.
Unless it's Josh Brolin.
That's true. Like something you
deepfaked into.
You deepfaked.
Are we done talking?
I think we are. Good 3.5 hours. We surpassed Endgame.
Nicely
at
done.
This point, including the trailer.
Just put this on as commentary to Endgame.
Doesn't match at all.
Except what are they talking about? Men in Black?
Except when they're talking about the time travel bullshit moment. That was probably around the same time. Because, yeah, it's about an hour into the movie, I think.
Yeah, yeah. This might... Did we just do our own Pink Floyd...
oh, God.
Wizard of Oz?
Dark Side of the Rainbow?
Yeah. Okay. I need an outro for the one that's going live non-Patreon. So that's what I'm starting right now.
Okay.
For when I cut in. Thanks for listening to the Film Rescue Show.
Yes.
If you'd like to check out a three-hour version of this one.
A three-hour tour.
That will be available on patreon.com/Montressor Media. Yes, we went for over 3 hours.
It's the Snyder Cut. You're welcome.
That's what I'll title this.
Oh, sweet Jesus.
Men in Black Snyder Cut.
Just put hashtag Snyder Cut and then you'll get all the views.
And it'll be perfect because we'll link back around on the fact that we just did Man of Steel as Men in Black 2. Yeah, so again, reiterating what I said at the top of this hour and a half, because that's probably the timestamp that you're seeing.
Sure.
On terrestrial radio, terrestrial podcast, non-Patreon podcast.
There you go.
To reiterate, if you would like to be on the show for potentially 3.5 hours at a time, send an email to filmrescueshow@gmail.com. Send your pitch of what movie you'd like to fix. It could be a couple sentences. It could be a full paragraph. You could have lots of notes. You could have no notes. Just send it in, and we will bring you on as soon as we are capable. I think the next episode will be a challenge.
Uh-huh.
For Fast and Furious, the fourth one.
Yes.
I'm excited for this one. We're also going to have a special guest, Scott from the Infinity Podcast, will be on helping us with this challenge.
Also known as Brandon, according to Devin.
Yeah, I don't know where that came from. I don't know.
I saw that message while I'm at work. I'm like, wait, what?
I was like, I don't know where he's getting that. The guy's name is Scott. Yeah, so he'll be on as a guest to help us with that challenge. Then I think coming up after that, we have Man of Steel?
That is Man of Steel next.
Man of Steel. We have, I think, Terminator Genesis.
That'll be further down the line.
Further down the line. We got a bunch of episodes lined up. We're not done yet.
No.
By a long shot.
No.
Also, I didn't say this at the top, and maybe I'll just cut this back in.
Okay.
If you could, go to Apple Podcasts and leave us a 5-star review. You don't have to say anything about the show in the review. Really, we're after the stars. But we will be reading the best and funniest reviews on the show at the maybe beginning and end of each episode. Who knows? We'll see what we do. One of our more recent ones was this group of good boyos
yes.
Take the time, along with some great guests, to talk about those movies we wish were better and do it. We are good boyos. I agree. I think that's all the tag. Yeah. Yeah. So for a buck, if you want to hear literally twice as much podcast,
yeah.
patreon.com/Montressor Media. Brandon, thanks for bringing me this movie, man.
Of course.
We did a pretty good job, just the two of us.
Indeed. Two for two. Think about it.
And then there were two. Uh-huh. Yeah, that's where I'm going to end it. Thanks for listening, and good night.
Hello, is there anybody up there? Just not if you...